Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.
And today we have another lesson from CEDH. CEDH is a metagame within the Commander format that sits at one extreme with highly consistent, highly efficient decks. Not all cards are equally powerful in all formats, or even in all metagames, but there are lessons to be learned from how people are brewing with the most powerful cards available. Today, we're going to be looking at ways to win the game other than the creature combat as Dr. Richard Garfield intended. But before we get to that, we got a little bit of news we want to talk about first. And top of our docket for things that are exciting and important for us, we got a big shout out to make. Number one, to our audience, we just passed 300 subscribers on YouTube as of the time of this recording.
Awesome. Thank you so much for helping us get to this goal.
Woohoo!
We also want to give a big shout out to Sekira, who is an MLC competitor and graphic designer who helped us put together our brand new logo. I can't just rave enough about how great it was to work with him. If anyone else out there is looking for a little bit of graphic design work, if they're looking for any branding, I'm going to have all of his social media coordinates in the show notes. Again, Sekira, thank you so much, and I really apologize if I'm mispronouncing your name.
The new logo looks really awesome, and it was a pleasure working with them every step of the way.
Definitely. Every draft that was submitted, everything looked fantastic. The hardest part about the entire process was picking the one we liked the most. They all looked amazing.
Absolutely. Now, from the high highs of finally making some great achievements for the channel and working with awesome people to just make everything better, why don't we talk about the recent banned and restricted announcement? Well, I guess just banned announcement in Commander, right? We had Golos banned in the format, and we had Worldfire unbanned. This was a pretty hot topic on the internet for about a week. What experiences did you guys have with Golos and Worldfire? What are your thoughts on the ban?
I'm not particularly plussed one way or another about it. I haven't really encountered Golos much as a player, either playing it myself or against it. And Worldfire is neat, and if you get there and able to resolve it, that's great, but there is a lot of setup behind it. So, I mean, it's things that happen, but I don't feel strongly one way or another towards it.
Yeah, I've never actually played against or with a Golos deck, so this is effectively no change for me. And I don't expect to be playing with or against Worldfire anytime soon, so also not a whole lot of change for me.
I'm sitting in a similar boat. I've played against maybe a handful of Golos decks, and some of them are that cool Maze's End deck, which we might or might not be talking about later on in this episode. But overall, I kind of see it as a net neutral for most of the game. That's not to downplay the people who have lost a commander for their deck, but I think the rules committee actually did a nice job explaining the reasoning behind the choice to ban the card. We're just going to leave it at that, I think, for now. I think there's a lot of other content creators who've gone into great depth about the ban, the pros and the cons, and I would direct you in their direction. Apart from that, though, we have had a new set come out since last we spoke. It's time for Werewolves of Innistrad, with Innistrad Midnight Hunt.
And the name is probably the most exciting thing out of it for me, I think.
Why is that, Alex?
If you've listened to any of our content in the past, I am the resident tribal player here. And none of the tribes currently showcased in Midnight Hunt really do it for me in terms of overall goal. There are some cool like one-off pickoffs that I liked, I definitely wanted to get. But the next set where we stay on Innistrad, Crimson Vow with Vampires, is something I'm definitely excited about. Like I said, there were some neat ones in Midnight Hunt, but all in all, it's kind of lukewarm for me.
All right, Jake, are you excited about Midnight Hunt with anything coming out of it? Is there anything that catches your eye?
I thought the flavor, they've been doing really good flavor-wise on sets the last few that they've released, and I enjoy kind of exploring the cards that convey what they're trying to get across. The whole day-bound, night-bound mechanic is a new take on the previous Innistrad flips. And I kind of like this one. I don't know if there's any particular cards that I'm super excited about. There's a few that I have my eye on, but I haven't purchased any yet.
Yeah, I'm mostly excited about some of the cool stuff that's showing up on mono-white cards in this set. Take a look through the set yourself. There's some really cool stuff going on here. But I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, because I just want to spend the few seconds that we have to gush about the basic lands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Pumpkin Plains.
All the sets have been doing a lot with showcase frames and showcase things, and, you know, there could be a bit of fatigue saying, hey, there are 19 different versions of cards. But with each plane that we visit having unique landscapes and all that, if they just want to keep unique alternate art, full art lands going for the foreseeable future, go for it. Because those are always changing, those are always evolving. And they look amazing.
They definitely look amazing. We've already talked that there's another Innistrad set on the horizon with Crimson Vow coming out, which presumably will be our vampire set. But we have some more news out of Channel Fireball. They're going to be hosting a large Magic the Gathering event in Vegas this year. And the three of us have talked and kind of come to a consensus that unfortunately we will not be attending this year. Well, we're very happy overall with the effort that Channel Fireball has put into trying to make sure that everybody who attends will be able to do so safely with important restrictions in place to make sure that people are vaccinated, they're testing negative for COVID-19. We still feel that for ourselves, we're not quite ready to go back to a big event like this. So from all of us at Gemstone Mine, if you are planning to attend the event in Las Vegas this year, we hope you go and have a wonderful time. We wish you all a great experience, and we hope you stay safe and healthy. Just make sure to follow the guidelines and recommendations to do so. And with that out of the way, Jake, let's start talking about some alternate win conditions.
All right, so alternate win conditions are actually defined in the comprehensive rules in 104.2b. It very eloquently states, an effect may state that a player wins the game, which is the entirety of that rule. So yeah, if there's something that says you win the game, that means you win the game. I know this is shocking, but yeah, that's where we're at. You can also win the game if your opponents lose the game. I know these are very basic statements, but this is what we're working with at the moment. The lose the game conditions, there are some cards that state that, but there's also the ones built into the basic rules. If they go down to zero life, if your opponents suffer 21 commander damage, if they have 10 poison counters, or if they attempt to draw from an empty library, these are all things that will happen and cause that player to lose the game.
So what are the reasons why we would want to consider playing an alternate win condition as opposed to just the classic big creatures swing out, deal 40 damage to each of our opponents?
So alternate win conditions allow you to sidestep a lot of the common situations that come up in the games. If your opponents happen to have an overwhelming board position where you just physically cannot swing with enough creatures to actually threaten a win that way, you can just go play some card that we're going to talk about and win the game that way. If one of your opponents have gained infinite life, it's usually pretty tricky to beat them down from that position, so you can just sidestep that completely and win the game. Another nice little thing is that it allows some otherwise unplayed niche cards to really shine. If you're no longer focusing on trying to just reduce life totals to zero, it gives you a completely different route to victory, so you can go on a completely different axis and pull out a bunch of cards that normally would not see play.
I always love when you get to see some unique cards. It's one of the real gems of Commander itself, just finding these cards that have no other home and making a home for them in a deck. And alternate win conditions seem like they can be a great way to make that happen.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite parts about this format is the weird interactions and very niche cards that come up and become a key part of your game plan. So that was a couple reasons why you would want to play alternate win conditions, but it's not always complete upside. There's some reasons why you might want to avoid playing alternate win conditions.
So one issue that can come up if you're playing an alternate win condition is that it will often interact on an axis that a lot of decks at the table may not be prepared to deal with. So it can feel like you're not even playing the same game as other decks at the table. The problem here is really twofold. Number one, it can seem like it could come out of nowhere for your opponents when you suddenly land an I win the game card or they lose the game card. And from what felt like kind of the midpoint of the game, it abruptly ends. That's not always the play experience that some people are looking for. And sometimes it's part of a rule zero conversation you need to have with them. The other issue that can arise is if you're attacking on a particular axis, you're not always going to have, well, quote unquote, backup from the rest of the table. We'll discuss it in a few minutes, but we already mentioned mill. When you are trying to mill out the table, you are not attacking in such a way that the damage that you're dealing is going to stack with the damage that your opponents are dealing to one another. You are attacking the library while your other opponents are likely attacking life totals. So you don't have, really have any help at the table to help it, well, get your deck there.
On that note, it can also lead itself to repetitive games. And if that's something you're fond of, it's worth noting. If you've got one or two dedicated win conditions for how your deck gets there, and it's always the same game plan as with mill or affecting other I win the game strategies. It can often lead to repetitive games, not only for yourself, but also for the people that you play against. And that's not something that everyone's necessarily looking about. John, you made a good reference to the zero or turn zero conversations. Definitely something to be considered if you're playing these alternate win conditions and run the chance of just being repetitive.
With that out of the way, let's talk about some of the alternate win conditions that have been printed in Magic's past. I did a little bit of research and looked up the win the game cards on Scryfall, and I thought it was kind of amusing that the first couple cards that say you win the game are not even legal in our format, or they're not even capable of triggering in our format. So the first one is The Cheese Stands Alone, which is a silver bordered unset card, so obviously we can't play that. Coalition Victory is another alternate win condition card, but that one's actually on the ban list. And then Battle of Wits is well known in some other formats, but you can't actually win with that card because Commander has a hard limit of 100 cards. So the oldest alt win con that is legal in our format, I believe it is Chance Encounter, which was originally printed in Odyssey. It's a red enchantment for two generic, a red and a red. It says, whenever you win a coin flip, put a luck counter on Chance Encounter. At the beginning of your upkeep, if Chance Encounter has 10 or more luck counters on it, you win the game. That's it.
It seems perfect for the new coin flip decks that are coming out, and you can see that in the current price tag on an original Odyssey printing. But fortunately, that one got a reprint. So it's a little bit more affordable at 11 cents currently.
And then from there, I think we've had about 20 or so. No, it looks like about 30 cards that have the text win the game on them. And those are legal in Commander.
Aside from cards that explicitly say you win the game, there are some strategies built into the game rules. One alternate win condition leans into the fact that if a player has to draw a card from an empty library, they lose the game. Richard Garfield baked this into the initial rules of Magic as a safety valve to ensure games couldn't wind up in stalemate situations that would never naturally end. Millstone, one of the first cards to help assist in speeding up this route, became the source of the keyword mill, which is something that's recently come into being. Another game rule-based way of limiting players is getting them to 10 poison counters.
A rule that came about when they started introducing poison counters in the set Legends. Good times.
So, if you have followed this format at all in any tangentially CEDH capacity, you would be familiar with a couple of cards that have shaped a lot of the format. These would be Laboratory Maniac, Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, and Thassa's Oracle. So these are three similar cards that are probably the most notable alternate win conditions. They allow you to win the game on the spot, instead of having to wait until the beginning of your next upkeep, like a lot of the other alternate win conditions do.
The first place that we saw this, as you mentioned, was printed on Laboratory Maniac. I think most people know what this is, but for anyone who hasn't heard of our friend the Lab Man, it is 2 and a blue for a 2/2 creature human wizard, which simply states, if you would draw a card while your library has no cards in it, you win the game instead.
So a lot of the early CEDH decks would run Laboratory Maniac as their main win condition, along with ways of emptying their library, either dumping the whole thing in the graveyard, or drawing your entire library, or exiling your entire library. And then you would need another way of drawing a card to actually trigger Labman. You wouldn't want to play the Laboratory Maniac, exile your library, and then pass the turn around the table and hope that nobody gets rid of your 2/2.
It was certainly something that could get very tense around the table if you had your Laboratory Maniac in play. A lot of early Laboratory Maniac strategies were based around also making sure you had protection. Because if someone went to remove your Laboratory Maniac in response to you trying to draw a card, guess what? If that Lab Man's gone, replacement effect is gone too, and instead of winning the game, you lose the game. It was very much an all-in strategy.
And that's kind of embarrassing. And it's also pretty fragile, considering it is just a creature. It's a 2-toughness creature, so like anything in the format can sneeze on it and kill it. There's a lot of instant speed removal, especially these higher-powered, high-interactive decks. So when Jace, Wielder of Mysteries came out, there was some innovation there. This is a legendary Planeswalker Jace for one generic and three blue. It has a replacement effect that says if you would draw a card while your library has no cards in it, you win the game instead. That sounds really familiar to Labman, but the key thing here is also that the plus one ability on Jace is target player mills two cards, draw a card. So Labman required you to have your entire library gone, and then you play an extra spell or effect to draw a card to win the game. Jace has the replacement effect and the card draw effect built in.
It takes us down from needing two different effects to win the game, two different cards, to needing a single card to potentially win the game. With the disadvantage being that Jace has a more prohibitive mana cost, with three colored blue mana symbols in the cost, and an additional cost overall. But it was seen as a significant upgrade, and when War of the Spark came out, Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, made his way into a lot of CDH decks, and people were already talking about cutting Laboratory Maniac, and there were some pretty fierce debates.
Yeah, I remember a lot of people talking about whether you want both effects in your deck, if you just want one. Another nice bonus that Jace has is that it's a Planeswalker, so it's a little less vulnerable to removal. None of the creature removal can hit it. And for the very few instances where there's direct damage removal in EDH, he starts with four loyalty instead of two toughness on Labman.
But, of course, we later learned that we shouldn't be worried about Lab Men or Lab Jace. Both Lab Men and Lab Jaces were found to be utterly inferior with the coming of our Sushi Overlord. Thassa's Oracle was printed in Theros Beyond Death. Thassa's Oracle is two blue mana for a 1/3 creature merfolk wizard with the triggered ability of when Thassa's Oracle enters the battlefield, look at the top X cards of your library where X is your devotion to blue. Put up to one of them on top of your library and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. If X is greater than or equal to the number of cards in your library, you win the game. For games of CDH and a lot of more high-powered games, that last line is all that you really need. If your devotion to blue is greater than or equal to the number of cards in your library, you win the game.
I remember seeing this spoiled. It's one of those cards that has a lot of words on it and takes a while to parse through. I was reading it and reading it in the first like six lines or so. I'm like, all right, whatever. And then the last one is just, oh yeah, you win the game. Yeah, that's a pretty good effect there.
And then it sinks in that you win the game with a triggered ability. The difference here between Thassa's Oracle and Laboratory Maniac or Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, is there is no longer a point of vulnerability. You lose the surface area of having a permanent on the battlefield that your opponents can interact with when you're going for the win. Because this is a triggered enter the battlefield ability, destroying Thassa's Oracle will still leave the Thassa's Oracle enter the battlefield ability on the stack. So if your library has zero cards in it, it doesn't matter if your opponents literally wipe the board in response to your enter the battlefield effect. You still win the game. You have to either stop Thassa's Oracle from entering the battlefield at all, or stop your opponent from having an empty library.
It definitely decreased the surface area of interaction in this particular line of winning the game.
The classic combination with Thassa's Oracle is to partner the Fishy Overlord with Demonic Consultation, which essentially is a single black mana at instant speed to name a card and then exile your library. Very simple, very straightforward. Blue, blue, black, I win the game. Two spells, if you can't counter either of them, well, that's a win.
Outside of CDH, though, there are tons of alternate win conditions for us to look at. Some of those appear in the way of creatures, enchantments, or other methods of winning the game outside of the normal combat step.
We're taking the time to each pick out a couple cards that we enjoy, so I'll go ahead and start. One of my favorites in my less competitive lists is Hellkite Tyrant. Hellkite Tyrant is a dragon for 4 generic and 2 red. It has flying and trample. Whenever Hellkite Tyrant deals combat damage to a player, gain control of all artifacts that player controls. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 20 or more artifacts, you win the game. I started including this card in some of my very early decks because I wanted an alternate win condition. just in case my main plan went south, whether my opponents got infinite life and I needed some other way to win the game. This was just one of my backups that I would kind of reliably fall to. I have never gotten it to go off. I have stolen very few artifacts with it, but the dream is still there. The dream will live on. Eventually, I'll get something useful out of this dumb dragon.
As long as we're talking about artifacts, I'll mention one of my favorite alternate win conditions in Mechanized Production. This is an enchantment from Aether Revolt. It costs 2 blue-blue for an enchantment aura. Enchant an artifact you control. At the beginning of your upkeep, create a token that's a copy of enchanted artifact. Then, if you control 8 or more artifacts with the same name as one another, you win the game. Importantly, it does not have to be the artifact that you have just enchanted. Certainly, there's plenty of value in putting a Mechanized Production on your Soul Ring and getting an extra Soul Ring every turn. But you can also still win while it's enchanting a Soul Ring if you've made 8 treasures, or 8 thopters, or 8 clues, or 8 food, or whatever other token artifacts you want to produce. Mechanized Production would still be satisfied with that.
And in the event that you do have lots of artifacts, an artifact-based strategy that you've been utilizing, and someone keeps destroying them, my alternate win condition is Mirrodin Besieged. It is a 3 mana, 2 generic and a blue enchantment from Modern Horizons, and it is a modal card. As Mirrodin Besieged enters the battlefield, choose Mirrodin or Phyrexian. Mirrodin, whenever you cast an artifact spell, create a 1/1 colorless mirror artifact creature token. That actually pairs nicely with Mechanized Production if you want to go off of mere creature tokens. The other half, though, is the alternate win con, Phyrexian. At the beginning of your end step, draw a card, then discard a card. Then, if there are 15 or more artifact cards in your graveyard, target opponent loses the game.
There's a lot of ways in blue with heavy artifact decks in particular to just oops into winning off of Mirrodin Besieged, which is kind of funny when it happens.
I do enjoy both Mirrodin Besieged and Mechanized Production. But for a card that is more in my color pie, there's Liliana's Contract. This is a black enchantment that was in Core Set 2019. It costs 3 generic and 2 black. When Liliana's Contract enters the battlefield, you draw 4 cards and lose 4 life. And then, at the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 4 or more demons with different names, you win the game. I thought this card would be worth highlighting because it has card draw up front built into it. So even if you're not getting the win condition out of it, it's not totally useless. It's not the best return rate for drawing cards, but it's something. And as more and more cards get printed, the pool for demons gets deeper. And eventually we're going to be able to have a deck that just has good cards in it that happen to also be demons with different names. So it's going to be less of a awkward deck building hoop to jump through and more just, yeah, I can toss this in my deck and win with my good cards that happen to be demons.
Speaking of other cards that have a nice win the game clause included on a card that is otherwise just a nice source of value, we have Revel in Riches, 4 and a black for an enchantment, which states, whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, create a treasure token. Then, at the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 10 or more treasures, you win the game. A great way for a deck that's leaning into black control, which is going to be doing a lot of removal, to generate lots and lots of resources. We've done episodes about just how strong treasure can be. And if you happen to have your Scrooge McDuckian vault of 10 or more treasures, at the beginning of your upkeep winning the game, it can cause a mad scramble of your opponents to try to force you to crack treasures or find a way to remove Revel in Riches. This can be a great subgame all on its own.
Or, if you're playing a more controlling defensive style, we have Test of Endurance. It is a 4 mana white enchantment, 2 generic white-white, and it states at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have 50 or more life, you win the game. So in strategies where you're defending your life total, utilizing life gain, or making it so that whenever anyone attacks you or tries to do damage directly to you as a player, it is directed to another source, it is a good way to simply shell up behind your walls and win by your life total, being just 10 points more than the starting life total that you begin the game with. Very easy to achieve in Commander, since it's only 10 life points, as compared to the original 20 life points in a normal game of Magic.
Life gain decks can be pretty obnoxious to deal with if you're not prepared, especially if they can outpace you or get unbounded life. So another card I enjoyed including in some of my early decks that I still do is Grafted Exoskeleton. This is a 4-mana equipment artifact. The equipped creature gains +2/+2 and has infect. There's a small downside of whenever Grafted Exoskeleton becomes unattached from a permanent, you have to sacrifice that permanent. And the equip cost is 2. This was also for dealing with decks that did a lot of life gain, kind of like, you know, a Test of Endurance deck. You can just attack them on a completely different axis. It's like, I don't care how much life you have. You now have 6 poison counters, and I have my next combat step. This is also helpful because it doesn't rely on your commander. You can just throw this on any of your creatures, and it will give them a little boost in power to get you to that 10 poison counters a little quicker.
And one of the more unique and harder to interact ways of actually having a I win the game mechanic that you rarely encounter, but it's incredibly difficult to deal with, is Maze's End. Maze's End is a land card, and it says Maze's End enters the battlefield tapped. Tap 1, and you can add a colorless mana to your mana pool. What really shines, though, is 3 in tap, return Maze's End to its owner's hand. Search your library for a gate card. Put it into the battlefield, then shuffle your library. If you control 10 or more gates with different names, you win the game. So, in a dedicated deck where you are ramping, searching for lands, being able to play multiple lands per turn and recur them from your graveyard, Maze's End is an excellent way to go ahead and close out the game utilizing a card type, lands, that are notoriously difficult to deal with for an EDH deck that isn't prepared to handle land destruction.
Now, apart from cards that simply say you win the game on them, we mentioned a few other ways that are literally baked into the rules of the format. And one of the format-defining rules in Commander is that if someone has gotten 21 or more commander damage from a single commander, they lose the game. Alex, you've built more than your fair share of Voltron decks in your time. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Voltron?
Voltron, as a meta, as a type, is designed around getting one or multiple creatures, usually your commander, geared up with either artifact equipment or auras, and try and steal a win out of nowhere. Usually through combat damage. There are some specific key numbers to kind of look at when you are looking at Voltron to make sure that your game plan, you know, goes to fruition without a hitch. 7 is my personal sweet number. It is 3 hits to 21 commander damage, so it limits the amount of times I have to actually make contact. So when utilizing Voltron, prioritizing cards that are going to give your commander evasion, so they can successfully attack through and get that damage through, and get their power to a level to where, hey, it's going to limit the amount of times I actually need to make contact before this player is eliminated, are huge keys to this strategy.
Yeah, it usually comes down to figuring out your magic number, where if your commander has 4 power, giving them 3 more power gets them to 7. On the other hand, giving them 4 more power gets them to 8, and that is still 3 hits to eliminate an opponent, so it doesn't really change the clock at that point. Both Jake and I have messed around with another Voltron commander, with Grevin Predator Captain, who instead of really needing to get suited up to go into combat, he just needed you to shed some blood. If you lost life, he could deal tons and tons of damage. So there are kind of spell-based or other ways that you can build a Voltron deck, but certainly the classic is with auras and equipment.
Grevin just wanted everybody to hurt. He was very indiscriminate, rather.
All he wanted was for everybody to share in his pain. So before we wrap things up of our discussion about these alternate win conditions, I think we have to contractually do a hot seat question, guys. As we have heard for several years now, Wizards of the Coast is planning to have a Magic television program on Netflix. And it seems to possibly be in development hell at the moment, with the original production team with the Russo brothers stepping out and a new production team stepping in. With everything shifting and changing around, there kind of presents an opportunity. With the success of shows like Star Wars Visions on Disney Plus, where a showcase-style program of multiple shorts to show different aspects of a universe, with different studios giving their own unique take on it. If there were to be a showcase-style show for Magic, what and who would you like to see showcased as part of it? And what kind of styles would you want to see it done in?
Ooh, that's a good one.
So while I'm stewing on this, I'll share a little bit of tangentially related info. I have started dabbling in a new hobby, messing around with Warhammer 40K stuff, because apparently Magic is not enough of a money sink. Anyway, they recently set up a thing called Warhammer Plus, and basically it's a miniature streaming service and then a bunch of other stuff. So they have some of these animated shorts for their universe to kind of expand upon things, which I think is actually very similar to what you're talking about. And I would definitely love to see some of that in the Magic style.
So I would definitely like the Star Wars Visions, which is fantastic if anyone hasn't watched it yet. But being able to showcase different studios and different styles, obviously the first thing that comes to mind in terms of animation is Studio Ghibli, which by default I'm not going to give as my answer because everyone knows that everyone's familiar with their work and it undoubtedly would look amazing.
How much money would it take to get Studio Ghibli to do a magic short? All of the money?
I'm convinced that it wouldn't take any money at all. It just has to interest Miyazaki, and I'm pretty sure that he would just do it if it interests him. I'm convinced he's just that kind of person.
Fair. Okay.
All right, so for me, the two studios or animation that I would like to see are two Japanese animation studios. One is called Studio Bones.
Oh, Bones.
Which is, you know, known for Fullmetal Alchemist, My Hero Academia, Eureka 7, if, you know, you watch some of the old anime, and then Mob Psycho 100, which I think, John, you mentioned that you actually enjoyed.
Mob Psycho 100, it looks so rough because they're copying the style of an artist who was not really known for his draftsmanship. He was known for his storytelling. So they kept that same rough style, and they just used it in so many incredible ways. There's so much mixed media in there. You can have one scene go from traditional cell animation to like oil on glass to charcoal drawings to... It's just, I can't put to words how beautiful that anime looks.
And I think they would do an amazing job animating a short of Planeswalkers just having at it. So if you wanted to sit there and say, hey, I want to have a vision where the Gatewatch is going against Bolas or Urza is going against Mishra, I think they'd be an amazing studio to animate that kind of combat that's not necessarily physical, but also with magic slinging around.
That would be awesome.
On the other half of it, though, the other studio I want to kind of shout out on this is actually JC Staff. And this one, particularly for me, they're the animation studio behind Food Wars. Food Wars looks great for what it is. It doesn't take itself very seriously. And there's so many unique, abstract ways that they kind of involve things in it. And I can see a short where it's just Jace, Lavinia, and Chandra going around Ravnica and just ridiculous things happening to them because it's the clash of personalities.
What about you, Jake? What kind of style? What would you want to see highlighted in a Magic the Gathering animated showcase?
All right, so the first thing that came to mind would be more of a high-tension horror type of thing. I'm thinking, like, evoke the idea of Alien, and it would be the initial contact of a Phyrexian invasion.
Ooh, okay.
You've got something lurking around. You don't even have to show it on screen for, you know, the vast majority or even the entirety of it. Just, you know, finding a little puddle of oil and people going missing and, oh, hey, look, half completed people. You know, I think that would be pretty cool. And there's definitely a lot to work with there. And in a completely different direction, what if there was a Planet Earth style documentary where you're just kind of observing, you know, Kavu in their natural habitat and watching sapperlings just kind of do their thing, whatever that is. And then, you know, get a nice David Attenborough narrator there.
And it has to be David Attenborough. Like, he exists in the multiverse. It is just David Attenborough.
No, Alex. Alex, I'm going to one-up you on this one. I'm sorry, buddy. But I want you to imagine that it's this calm, soothing woman's voice giving this voiceover. And then at the very end, we pan back and see it's just Vivian getting, like, super excited about all these animals as the kind of facade of this calm, genteel discussion keeps falling away. And she just gets way too geeking out about the animals that she's seeing.
All right. But it has to be the right voice actor for it. That's what's going to sell it.
Absolutely. As for me, I would really like to see kind of, again, a diversity of different art styles and different stories that could potentially be told. I would love to see a killer fight between Planeswalkers or some kind of a magic duel. With you described with Studio Bone, I wouldn't mind seeing Studio Trigger take a run at it too. They've kind of proven themselves time and time again, another Japanese studio that made some pretty sick animation for that Star Wars showcase. The other one that I would really enjoy seeing would be something a little bit lighter and I won't say kid-friendly or family-friendly, because I think at the end of the day, WotC would want their stuff to be kid-friendly and family-friendly no matter what they did. I wouldn't mind seeing DreamWorks Pictures from an American studio take a crack at it too, because a lot of the stuff that they've done with the first half of the Voltron reboot, the whole run of She-Ra, that was really, really good on Netflix. That style seems like one that could be really conducive to a more narrative, magic-focused story, potentially just following one of the planeswalkers and maybe even just telling like how their spark ignited. They've done a great job of blending a pretty traditional but good-looking aesthetic with good storytelling, which I would love to see.
So let me paint this picture for you then. The Gatewatch saga from Battle for Zendikar all the way till they defeated Bolas in War of the Spark. Animated and written in the style of just Don Bluth.
But who would they get to do the musical numbers?
I think the answer is just always going to be John Williams.
All right. Well, on that note, I think that's where we're going to bring this episode to a close. We certainly didn't have time to cover all the alternate win conditions that are available in this format. What are your favorite alternate win conditions? Is there anything that you've made work in a unique way? I mean, we completely left out things like aristocrats, which are going to let you win by draining someone's life down to zero, but will often do so without needing to rely on the combat step. Tell us about it. You can add us on Twitter, where we are at GemstoneMineMTG.
I am at Necropotency.
And mine is at GemstoneAlex on Twitter.
You can also leave us a comment on YouTube, where we are GemstoneMinePodcast. Or, if you have a more long-form reply, you can send us an email at gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.